Log Talk Radio.
It's time for the Exposed Vet, Haddit.com Veteran Podcast. Exposed Vet has teamed up with Haddit.com to bring you in-depth information about all issues affecting today's veteran.
Yeah,
now,
well,
here's your host, John and Gerald.
Check and see where he
Welcome
is at.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Haddit.com Exposed Vet Podcast. Today, welcome to the show, folks. This is John, this is co-host Gerald with the Veterans Haddit and Exposed Vet VA podcast. Today is Thursday, I'm thinking, and it is the 20th day of May, 2021. And today, we're supposed to have Alex Graham on. We're going to follow up on last week's Q show. But Alex, I guess he's had a little, he's had a little bit of difficulty getting in, so we put a call out to him, as y'all may have heard. So hopefully he'll join us pretty shortly and regularly, but we can go ahead and get started on it. Gerald and I have been doing this for a long time, and Q is no stranger to us. We've actually seen it in operation under many different factors. But Q is short for a clear and unmistakable error. And basically the VA states that you really cannot file a Q claim unless the decision is final. That means the appeal time for the decision is usually 1 year after the decision. Now, contrary to popular belief, I know several folks out there, they're like, I'm going to file Q. Well, if your claim's still going, really you can't file a Q. You can ask the VA to Q themselves and make a mistake. I guess I would call that an in-process Q, wouldn't you, Joe?
Yeah. And they've been known to queue themselves, and especially if it's pointed out, and somebody thereby lets the veteran cut some of that year off, you know, and that it's best to ask the VA to queue themselves if you know they do have a queue. A lot of times you think they do when they may not, but if you don't have a queue, or they'll sure let you know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, generally speaking, if you have a queue claim, okay, you're asking the VA to revise the decision that is final, meaning that the time to appeal the decision is over with. And doesn't matter how old the decision is, if you file a claim back in 1990, and you just find out that the decision was wrong because of the factors that show a Q, you can challenge that decision. And you can get paid back to that date if you win. You have to show that the decision contains a certain kind of mistake, and it has to be an undebatable mistake. And that means undebatable means you take that mistake and you show it in front of a certain number of people, and then the majority of those people would have to agree with you. That's legal mumbo jumbo, folks. I'm not an attorney, so, but that's what it says.
Now, I've filed a Q before, and
you did, don't you?
We pointed out the 38 CFR regulations that they queued, the ones that they erred in. And they went back, my land, quite a few years on me. Of course, it was only a 10%.
Was that you?
It still went back quite a few years, and you know, all that adds up. But
was that high turbine generator in your ear?
Yeah. Well, We were shooting them 1.55 howitzers, one of those things. And
but 4-inch, they do make a lot of noise.
Oh, yeah, I'd say they do.
They jump off the ground too, don't they?
and there were several other types of explosive we was using, but anyway, it did cause air damage, and we pointed out.
You remember having a man handle those shells? You remember having to hunt those shells and put them in the gun, load them up?
I never had to load them. I was there when they were shooting, but I wasn't loading. Good thing, because I've
never. they're heavy, man.
Yeah, I've seen they were. There's a lot of weight there.
But now, some people will tell you that a Q claim is the hardest claim to win, which it probably could be in some aspects. I guess it all depends on who you get to represent you and how they present it to the VA. Of course, anytime there's a mistake made, the VA kind of like, oh, no, we didn't do the mistake. Because I guess if I make a mistake, they get, I'm not going to say they get exercised or whatever, ostracized. They might get a pinch or a slap on the wrist. But some of them can get a pat on the back for making mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think on mine it was on tendonitis. They give me 0% on tendonitis.
According to
the regulation, if you have tendonitis, 10% is usually the going.
That's the only rating for it.
Yeah, 10%.
I didn't see
zero.
They
can't give you zero for tendonitis.
So folks, you got tendonitis and you got zero. Something's not right in Denmark.
You can kill them on that, man.
That's right.
10%'s the minimum, and I suspect also the maximum that they can give you.
So let's put this scenario. If you're Mr. Billy Bob Vet and you've got a service-connected disability rating of 94.4%, okay, you drop back and pop a 10 if you got tinnitus on there, that might put you over the hump.
It very well could. Of
course, now, I tried to convert my calculator the other day to one of them VA math calculators. I took it all apart, and I turned that sucker on, started typing that stuff in there. So that thing started smoking.
Yeah, they got a weird way of doing things.
I opened it back up, and everything in there was a big old glob of plastic melted mess. And that was a good Texas Instruments calculator, too. They're only 20 years old.
I mean, that's like new.
Yeah, so I threw that scrap pile. But, you know, the Haddit website has a lot of stuff about Q. There's a lot of log roots that have it on there, too. Some people have had it, especially one of the former members. She passed. She's been dead for some time now. Her name was Carly, and she was the Q. She was Miss Q.
She was
If a person was going
queen.
To, if they posted on her about a Q, she was all over it.
Yeah,
she knew exactly what she was doing. Yeah, she was the expert in this room of this stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
she was.
I think her position. She worked in the eye world, like laser surgery, stuff like that, and glasses and stuff, and ears. So that was her cup of tea, and she knew the rings too. I mean, she read them, and then she came a long way. Rest her soul. You know, she was a big loss for Haddit when she passed. And, of course, there's a lot of Q eagles out there. But basically what it's saying is a Q and a. You cannot Q it unless it's a final decision according to the VA. And it has to be a error that will change the minds of many people who look at it. And she'll be pretty much on the spot. Now, the VA has, when they adjudicate claims, they're supposed to have a review process for some of these claims. I know they got a quality assurance team. So that quality assurance team should be able to pick these cues up, you know, and say, hey, this is wrong. We need to fix it. Of course, now, if you do too good of a job in quality assurance, give out too much money, it might be a different issue, you know. Huh. So I'm serious. But kind of like the insurance business, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't like giving that money out.
They sure
they don't care. And they don't care if they drag you out 20 years. They don't care. So, but that's the situation we're into. But I've got an active queue right now in process. And, of course, they denied it. It's going to the board. And once the board sees it, I believe they'll turn around and rule in my favor. That's just going to open the door for more. But if you are in service and you get out of the military and you have a condition in the military that you've seen medical for, let's do hypertension, please, just for an example. Say you went to sick call and medical and they took your blood pressure and it was 150 over 110, 105. That's in the record. Well, blood pressure fluctuates up and down. So you go back again, and your blood pressure is normal. Well, 6 months later, you go back again, and it's up a little bit. Okay? So when you get out, you go see your outside doctors, and your blood pressure is sky high. He diagnoses hypertension, tells you you're going to die. You're too young to have hypertension. You try to do it. So you learn about VA claims like that. So I had hypertension in the service. Let's file a claim. So you file a claim. And when you get the claim filed, and a year later you get a decision. Your claim is denied. There's no service records available because they didn't get the records. Even though you had the other doctor's diagnosis and stuff from the first post-service year, because hypertension is a presumptive disease for 1 year. You know that, Gerald?
Yes.
Okay. So they still deny the claim even though you have that evidence in there. So you let it go. You get dejected and won't quit. So eventually you wise up because they have got the records and you try to reopen it. They do it, they deny it again. No new material evidence. That's where the queue came in. And they're using the wrong decisions, trying to hide that first decision, what they're trying to do. I can tell you on that right now. On it. But that's just an example. Q can cover a lot of areas. It's got to be a legal error, though. And most of it's misapplication of the rating schedule. Like 0% for tinnitus, which should be 10.
Yeah.
The rating schedule is a big book. There's a lot of conditions. And unfortunately, people that go in the military wind up with a lot of those conditions because of either some type of trauma, exposure. The military is a dangerous place. It's an industrial behemoth. You know, I mean, there's machinery. There's people. There's all kind of stuff. There's grinding. There's slick spots. There's red lead paint. There's lead. There's asbestos. There's radiation. Not to mention they even purposely spray VX on you to see how erect it affects you. People, that did happen. That did happen. I know a guy that wanted that service connected for it.
Yeah, it did happen.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on. Yeah. They've done a lot of exposure issues to veterans without the veterans' knowledge. And as they go through life, things start manifesting, and by the time you find out that it was actually your ailments manifest themselves, or, you know, the nexus was back in the service. It's nearly impossible to prove. It takes a team of doctors and a lot of good people to work to prove the case up.
Well, that's what it takes. So, I mean, it takes I hate to say this, but once a claim reaches a certain level of complexity, for example, you get a claim off on the wrong foot, say you have a bad representative and he files the wrong thing or things like that. Once you get off on the wrong foot, it's easier to straighten up an aircraft carrier by hand than it is to straighten the claim up that's going off the tracks, off the rails. I mean, it can be put back on the rails, but you got, you know, if you know the right people and get the right help, you can do it. But also keep in mind that people are people. And in order to get the best representation you can find, you've got to research and do your homework.
Takes a lot of homework.
So what's that claim? But if that claim gets off the rails, it's a bad situation.
I think most people make the same mistake when they're filing their claim. They overload it with things. You should pick out two or three special issues like hypertension or diabetes or different things like that that you can work on.
Sure.
And then later on, add others to it. You may have a whole bunch of others, but because when them claims hit the regional office and they're all loaded down with from hind nails to sore toes,
you know what happened?
They're at a loss. I mean,
you know what happened?
First thing they do is grab that deny stamp.
No, they read that file and all the documentation. So, they was in the Air Force and they flew these planes. They saw sorties in there and they transferred that to sore toes.
they're quite a bunch. Whether it's laziness or just being careless or who knows. But you got a bunch of issues in your claim, no one wants to touch it.
I've been trying to call the VA office of choreography tap dance because they'd like to tap dance around in the choreo. You know, everything's choreographed. They've got the ways of doing stuff, and it's not, some of it's pretty good and some is not very good at all. But some of these decisions I've seen come out of these regional offices tell me one thing. These are some very intelligent people that do this.
Yeah, they're...
Because
they know
nobody,
the ins and outs.
I mean, I live in the United States of America. I've seen some crazy stuff in my lifetime. But nobody is that stupid.
Yeah, they do that a lot of this by design. They've got away with it for years. And to get the right people looking at your claim, now, they're not all that way. There's some really good people works for the VA, and they should be recognized. But my land, getting them working on your claim is really hard.
Hey, you're good, Alex.
I don't know which way you can hear me. Can you hear me now, or if I push this button, do I lose you?
No, you're here, buddy. We got you.
Oh, okay.
We're glad
the problem. You made it. When you're paralyzed from the neck up, you think the show starts at 4:30.
Well,
that's all
you
right.
Woke me up, Alex.
I might extend this one, Alex, and get a full show in.
Well, that's okay. I've got a ton of stuff here. I've been digging and rooting and looking all over for neat stuff to throw into this thing to show to your to the Haddock crew or to the audience. Mm-hmm. And when I put my post up on AskNod.org, that's what it is, I put that thing in there you were referred to last week about the Mr. Potato Head.
Yes.
You know, that's, to me, when I started thinking about how SMC worked, it was the easiest, most logical thing in the world. I didn't know he was going to become politically incorrect later on. You can't talk about Mr. Potato Head anymore. They're probably going to take him out of the stores along with the Dr. Seuss, the Cat in the Hat books. It's just going.
I got to tell you, Tater Head's going to stay in my books.
Well,
I mean,
it's a good way to use an examination or, you know, giving somebody an example of what you want to use for something like this. I think it's priceless because you can just keep removing things from Mr. Potato Head and it just imitates perfectly what you're doing except for SMCP. But
P, Park.
You know, I talked with you guys about, not you, but I at great length for a long time back in the, I'd say 2013 through 15, somewhere in there, with a loyal Bronco vet. And I talked to him, and you know, he's a good friend. I broke bread and cooked steaks for him here at my house back in, I don't know when, 2011. But he drove out here to pick up his son, Loyal, and I can't remember his son's name, but pick him up as he was getting out of the military and make sure he got home and didn't sign up for another 3 years and another tour and a few more broken bones or whatever. And he rescued him in time, too. Thank God for small favors. But he and I have been talking over the 2013-15 area about this Howell versus Nicholson decision, and I mention it in that Mr. Potato Head thing, the SMC, what is it, blog I wrote back when, which I've revised and changed about 10 times in the intervening years. But they talked about Howell, Loyal kind of took that to mean that as long as you've got 100% and you're housebound and you can't leave, that means you get SMCS. Well, it doesn't work that way. You got to have that 60%. That's one way to get there. But the other way is most definitely if you get a doctor and make sure you get a doctor to say you are unable to leave the house. Obviously, if you can go to a medical appointment, that isn't really leaving the house. You're just attending a medical appointment. And that's what they screwed Mr. Howell on. They said, well, shit, you showed up here at the SMC, dude. Hey, you ain't very housebound. Now are you?
Yeah.
Well, that's if you needed surgery, you'd have to leave the house, wouldn't you? They don't make house calls for surgery.
Oh man, let's bring in the operating room. You get the lights, and I get to bed, and let's sterilize the place. And you'll bring the blood in. Yeah.
Somebody get one of them big vans. We haul all this shit over there.
No. I've seen them cut out people's kidneys on TV.
Well, like I said, VA doesn't give away money. We all know that. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. So to think that Howell permits you to just instantly just say, I'm housebound, I can't leave, and I'd like to leave, but I can't, so I get another $350 a month. It doesn't work that way, and nobody should try to misread it. Even Mr. Howell didn't contest the interpretation that you are you couldn't leave the house in order, you know, to make money automatically qualifies you. It's the actual doctor saying you can't leave the house because you don't have any legs. You don't have this. You don't have that.
Well, because you're service-connected disability, I mean, it's regardless of whatever you have, you know.
Well, right, and the doctor can say it. You could be, agoraphobia, where you're afraid of seeing other people or talking or even being out in public. There's a lot of guys with a major depressive disorder that are kind of like that. I think that as long as you can get a doctor to say it, you're legitimately entitled to the money. I don't ever cheat and steal at this game. Boys, it's you know, the VA's got some crazy ass rules. Nobody can deny that, but that's their poker game and their rules. So I don't contest that. I just say, okay, here's the Cliff Book. It says you can do this, you can't do that. Well, my Cliff Book says, well, you know, if they don't tell me I can't do it, I'm gonna do it.
Okay. Well, you need to. I mean, it's. That M21 is their book, and they stick to it, and they like to add to it every once in a while, and deviate. The biggest thing is interpretation, you know. We interpret this rule this way.
That's right. Well, there's a very senior VLJ, Veterans Law Judge, named Cherry Crawford. A real nice gal, and she's got a beautiful diamond stud in the left side of her nose and cornrows. And one morning before her, I was admonished that if I mentioned the M21 one more time in my legal brief while I was presenting to her, that she would have to take me out and spank me, because the M21 has nothing. The BVA looks at the M21 as if it's a, you know, a little bit higher than whale shit in the ocean.
Let me explain, Alex. Let me put the quality assurance spill on it real quick. We know the boss document when it comes to Veterans Affairs. It's called the Title 38 Code of Federal Regulations. And the VA over the years have decided they were going to make a working copy in order to do their job. So they invented the M21, which basically is supposed to be a derivative off the Title 38, so they can have it on an everyday basis. So instead of having to take the big manual out, which is about, thicker than 10 Bibles on top of a stack of wood, turn around and have to go to that regulations, they made this little thin sheet. And basically it was to ease their job, you know. And so they published that, the Federal Register, and they had it going, and it's in the warrants and the references, and that's the M21. But the M21 is what they call, in quality assurance world, a level B document, which is a working copy. Working copies are what you use in your place of employment to work. But it always must be covered by a boss, which is the Title 38. And it's not supposed to deviate from that boss, or you're in trouble.
Well, John, the problem compounded itself with interest with when they invented a computer. That's the first thing they decided to do at the VA was to dump the M21 into a computer and allow the computer to make a decision. Now, we saw what happened with that. And when was that, 2001, A Space Odyssey, when they let HAL 8000 run the ship and started locking them out and killing each other? Well, it's the same thing with an M21. An M21 operates like the UCMJ. You're guilty until proven innocent. You are not a chicken dinner winner at the VA until you are a winner. You're a loser until you prove that you're a winner, basically. And that's what the M21 does. It's a wonderful tool if it were employed correctly, but the moment you computerize it, what you end up doing is you have some chucklehead GS-10 or 11 VSR, not an RVSR or RQVSR or SVSRVSR. They got more initials than they got common sense. But the bottom line is they're sitting there typing.
the higher level acronym, the more pay they get.
Yeah. But here's your chucklehead GS 10 or 11 veteran service rating. Typing Raider. In the parameters of your thing. Do you have an IMO? Well, yeah. So he enters it. Yeah, you got an IMO. Well, who's it from? Well, it's from your chiropractor. Does it say more likely than less likely? No. Does it say probably? Yes. Oh, denied. I mean, the computer automatically says stop. You don't have to add anything else in. Boom. And you look around on the back in the paper chute, and out comes the printed denial. Thank you for your service.
You
are unable to give you your money.
If you get that far, because if you're a veteran and you never file a claim, you file your first claim. And the first thing they do is they sit back and they look at it, and then they've got some qualification factors to go through. First, they look at your military service. Did you serve the proper amount of time?
Well, next correct. They put all that in, and then they pull that from your records and put it in. They've got some guy that just incorporates all that in there. And if they enter one thing wrong, one misstroke of the key, boom, garbage in, garbage out.
The biggest one's character of service.
And with the AMA, with the whole computerization of this thing, VBMS and all this stuff, one error after another has been compounded to the point where VA's got tons of money, but they don't have to pay it out except for people like me representing clients. You know, we know what the law is, and they can't bullshit us with an M21. You know when you're getting a bad decision. You look at it and say, nope, this thing just does not qualify. I'm going to appeal it. And, when you get up to the board, at least you got somebody who doesn't have shipper brains, and they can figure it out. I have tremendous success at the board. I haven't lost anything except for the most biggest one that went up to the CABC. But Ken Carpenter and I are refurbishing that one. I held back some records that I just disremembered to give them those records, but from 1970.
Sherry Crawford. She's the one that awarded my award.
Yeah, she's a very fair judge.
She seemed to be extremely fair, yeah.
I had three hearings in front of her in a row, September 18th, 19th, and 20th of 2018. And one was for R1, and I got that 28 days later. I think one was for a fella that had what do you call that now? Some kind of leukemia, and he had bone marrow cancer. And they had to, x-ray him until he glowed in the dark and kill all of his bone marrow, and then he got a transplant from his sister. Well, it didn't take, but he's doing a whole bunch of chemotherapy to keep it. I don't know if it's chemotherapy. That's how I argued it to Judge Crawford. I said, well, Your Honor, he's got to take this shit for life. So I consider that to be a continuing therapy. So his rating should continue at 100%. And he knocked it down to, 40 or something like that. And judge looked at it and she says, well, I see you got an IMO here, and your oncologist IMO says, if he quits taking this shit, his body's going to reject that bone marrow and he's going to die. I said, yeah, so if he quits taking it, that's kind of important. That's therapy to keep him from dying, wouldn't you say, Jesus? I agree wholeheartedly. Here's your money. The third one, she wasn't as pleasant about. That's the one she denied me on, but I'm working on that one. But, hey, she's fair, Gerald. She's as fair as any I've met. Hey, I've met some veterans law judges that are just, I can get right in front of them, 4 feet away from them. I'm giving my presentation to them. And you can see that, his eyebrows arch up, his eyes roll up in his head. Yeah, sure, buddy. Everybody comes in here has that story. And that was the guy I had for my for myself, and I lost that claim, and I went up to CAVC and won it in a heartbeat. But that guy, he was anti-veteran, and I went back and I read a lot of his decisions, and I was kind of stupefied that this guy could get a job at the BVA. He wasn't legit. He was anti-veteran or something. I don't know what it was. He was a Democrat, you know.
They appointed, or do they have to apply?
Well, I was researching him. I found out he donated to Act Blue. Now, apparently Act Blue is a big money catcher for the Democrats. You donate to that, and then they disperse it, portion it out. And if he was donating to them, he wasn't a very good judge. But I learned I got 3 judges back in 1991. All 3 of them were sound asleep or already writing denied on it before I even made my opening argument.
Mm-hmm.
That was back in the day when you got there were 20 panels of 3. When that's where the term board came in. Used to be when you had a board of veterans appeals, you had 3 judges and one of them was a doctor. But
Three-judge
panel, Gerald. Yeah, I learned that one.
Well, that was the quickest way in the world. Now, here's another. I want to talk to you guys about another method VA uses quite frequently, and they just get this. Just they start whipping the veteran. He works harder and harder to help them do it to him. Let's just say for shits and grins, you got a 60% for your bad back, and you got 50% for PTSD, and you got 30% for a skin disorder from Agent Orange. You got 20% for diabetes. You got all this stuff. You can keep throwing more stuff in there until the cow jumps over the moon, but you don't get to 100. But finally, you get one more 10% for tinnitus or something, and it carries you over the top. 96%.
Yep.
Boom, I've got 100%. Yahoo! The VA says, yes, you do, and here's your 100% per month paycheck, $3,300, whatever. Well, they're screwing you. You should be getting SMCS. The reason they're screwing you is they're going at it the wrong way. They have to look at it and say, okay, which one of these diseases really prevents this guy from working? Okay, 60% for his back. That it's a mess. He's using a walker. So let's give him TDIU for his back, and then take some of these other ratings and give him his SMCS. And I don't know. I can't even tell you how many guys come to me and they say, how do I get this SMCS? And I look at his code rating sheet and I said, shit, you already are, really, but you just got to rearrange it. So it's a game. You go in there and you file and say, I want SMCS. You guys are screwing me on this combined rating. No, sorry, see you later. And you get up to the board and you make the argument to a judge, a good one, like Terry Crawford is a good example as any. Matthew Blackwelder is another good one. David White, W-I-G-H-T. I got a list of as long as I can think of.
Well,
they're great judges, and you can win in front of them as long as you don't bullshit them.
That comes into the topic that we're discussing, that was Q, because, see, SMCS, I mean, there's no claim to file for SMCS because there's really no such creature.
Right.
And special monthly compensation is supposed to be an ancillary benefit.
Right, Bradley versus Peak.
Under certain conditions. Mm-hmm. So that would also, if you don't have it and you're playing final and they did it and you don't have SMCS and you're supposed to have it, then that could fall under that. That is definitely be a strong Q claim.
Well, that's right. And that's when I started to tell you all about this last week. As I said, how do you want to go about it? Do you want to just file for SMCS again and they give it to you? And then start the argument. I mean, begin the argument of what the effective date is for it, because that's the crucial thing that Bradley versus Peak settled back in 2008, is you're entitled to SMCS the moment your medical records prove you're entitled to it, or let's say, your code rating sheet. You're 100% here, TDIU, DEA, permanent total. And you got all these other little ratings here, and they just forgot to stick it into the broken VA computer that doesn't tell you anything. They didn't infer the issue, the ancillary entitlement. And is that a cue? Well, hell yeah, it's a cue, but do you want to go fight it as a cue? That's the problem. You get into this, the same thing with this, with 3.156C, Service Department Records. They forget to do the 3.156C retrospective and see if they can give you a rating way back to 1970, let's say. They don't do that. They give you your current rating, and you say, no, I'm entitled to that. And they just say, no, you're not. And it's just two people saying, yes, no, yes, no, and you never get anywhere. Do you file a queue? Well, yes, you can file a queue. Do I suggest it? Depends on the case. But when you do file a queue, you realize you've got to, all of a sudden somebody puts some handcuffs on you. You can't argue with a more recent legal precedent case from the CAVC or the Fed Circus. You've got to use the what was in existence, legally speaking. Like, I had a guy say, hey, I just won this thing. They gave me Q all the way back to 88 for 40% for whatever the 40% was for. He didn't say, I don't remember. But they gave it back to him. He says, can I claim TDIU back to then? Because I don't have any money, never made any money after this happened in 88. So I should get TDIU. And I said, well, did you file for it? Well, no. I said, well, you know, that was before Rice versus Shinseki. That was 2010. And you know Rice, that's the one where I said, anytime you file for an increase, TDIU is on the table. It's a claim, basically, or it's not an ancillary entitlement, but it's a potential. You might potentially be entitled to it based on your circumstances. And so VA, it would be in error if they didn't at least try to figure out if you were or were not entitled to TDIU. It is a claim, but it wasn't in 1988. Rice wouldn't be decided until 2010, so you can't use that in your argument for why you should have gotten TDIU in 88. They'll throw it out and say, sorry, wrong, that didn't work like that.
Yeah,
now, you know what?
Regulations.
Go ahead, John.
The regulations. There has to be the regulations that are in effect at the time the initial decision was made.
The legal posture. Now, you know, I had a case where I was struggling on an old one back in the 70s, 80s or something, but it was before the Court of Veterans Appeals. And so where do you go to get a cite for that? Tell you where you go, son. You start researching by typing in things that would give you a legal determination on the presumption. In my case, I needed the presumption of regularity. But that didn't begin at the CAVC until, oh, hell, I don't know, 90, 91 maybe. The first case came up. It was a presumption of the regularity of the mail. A guy down in Puerto Rico mailed something. It never got there. And they said, screw you. And he says, well, the regulation, you know, it says it's presumed I mailed it, and he proved it with his little return receipt requested deal, and the Court of Veterans Appeals said, roger that, sent it back to the BVA, sent it back to the regional, and they said, it got there in time, you got to re-adjudicate this. So I didn't have a cite for the presumption of regularity in 1980 or whenever it was, 84, I think. So I started researching the whole presumption of regularity, and I found cases going all the way back to 1925 discussing the presumption of regularity, and some of them were Fed Circus decisions. So I quoted them in my brief because I obviously couldn't cite anything from the CAVC or the Fed Circuit, and I won. And that taught me, you know, you got to be able to think outside the box on everything you do with the VA. Don't ever let them dictate to you what the rules are. You obviously can't make up your own rules, but you can use other rules. You can take things and modify them. There's like this combination of 60-60, 30-20, 10-10, 10-10, Yahoo, I made 100. VA knows that you're just pounding against the wall there. You're just bloody in your fist getting to 100 that way. It's like I pointed out to somebody one time. I says, you know, it takes 22 10% ratings to get to 100%. But you know what? They'll never give you a P&T. Every one of those little 10% for hemorrhoids and flat feet and everything else is never, ever going to prevent you from getting up and going to work. SMCS, it's a technique, but when you tack on Q and go after them with Q, you're going to have to use those regulations that were in effect at the time the Q happened. So you guys put that in your tool pouch and say, wow, I can just keep Googling this thing, presumption of regularity, and then every one of those decisions you read will lead back to a one before it, and they'll say, we rely on this. And all the jurisprudence that has ever been created at the Court of Veterans Appeals between its inauguration in 1989 and probably up to 1995, 94, somewhere in there, all of that stuff was all built on Federal Circuit precedents that was in existence before the Court of Veterans Appeals was. When you read a Court of Veterans Appeals decision in 2021, all the cites in there are to jurisprudence about veterans affairs. They don't, you don't ever drag in O.J. Simpson, you know, they never drag in the precedents that was exhibited in O.J. Simpson trial on appeal. It wouldn't be applicable, but you could use it if it made a judicial point, like the presumption of regularity of the mail, the presumption that your doctor, what your doctor wrote in his report is presumed to be correct. See, a VA always benefits from the presumption of regularity that they're doing everything right. The only way you can win that is if you rebut it and say, look, this is very irregular. Look at this. Nobody ever does it this way. And the court or whoever it is, the board looks at it and they go, yeah, that is kind of squirrely. Okay. Why on earth they do that? Man, that's queer as a $3 bill. You got to use the precedent, and it has to be current when you go to do these. But with SMCS, if you choose to go down the Q route, you're going to find it's harder. But you can always buttress that legal brief that you write for your claim and say, you know, really, I don't have to file this Q claim, but I'm going to argue this Q claim. But in reality, I can lean on Bradley versus Peak. Those guys should have given me this back in whatever year it was that I qualified for it. See, right here it says I lost the use of my right lower extremity in 2012, but you didn't give me SMCK. It's Q. It was Q because you did that. But Bradley versus Peak protects me because it's an ancillary entitlement. Loss of use of that thing automatically generates an SMCK. So you want it from two different angles. And there's no such thing as not having – I learned this in Vietnam, man. You can never be too rich or have enough hand grenades. I learned that the hard way. I hucked one about 2 o'clock in the morning, bounced it off a tree about 20 feet in front of me, and damn near ate it. That's why I was glad I had another one. But SMC, be it S or K or any entitlement all the way up, is due and owing the moment you qualify for it. And if you file it as a Q, they'll try to argue it and say it wasn't a Q. But when you get it up to the board will look at it and they'll say, God, what you guys been smoking? Of course this is a Q. I mean, this is Q, it's like reasonable minds can only agree that it's not right. you don't face that level of judicial review at the regional. They just plug it into the M21 and it spits it out. It's just you almost didn't need to put it in, Ben. You should have an autopilot on those things where in the moment it gets near the computer just cranks out a denial.
You just nailed it, Alex. Legal precedent is not practiced very strongly at the regional office, however, at the board and the courts. It's practiced very different.
Okay, now, I'll tell you what, if y'all go to my website right now, I updated this last night or this morning, I can't remember when. You scroll down there below the Mr. Potato Head where it says special monthly compensation, what is it? You'll see down there under telephone number, it says PSC attached Q filing for forgetting to award all the entitlements. Now, that's another one they screw up all the time. Redact Q Prelim 2021. And this is a gentleman whose wife came from hadit.com to me back in, it was in 2018, and says, man, my husband, I mean, you talk about, he's a poster child for disabled. He deserves to have SMCL. You look up Andrew in the dictionary, and you look up SMCL in the dictionary for aid and attendance, there's a picture of Andrew. And I said, okay, I'll take your claim. So I fought and fought and finally won it in March of 2019, March 2020. But they forgot to give him the bump, which is it's under SMCP, where you get a one-step bump or a half-step bump. And this is another problem you're going to see when you get into the SMC land. The moment you go past L, which is aid in attendance or loss of use or lower extremities or blindness or being bedridden, once you get past that, then you need to do a little inventory of all your claims on your rating sheet. You're not going to ever get a rating sheet unless you get your claims file or unless you have a agent or an attorney representing you. The VA doesn't send you the claim sheet. They don't want you to have the information because then you know what the diagnostic code is. You read about it in your little narrative decision. It says, we're going to give you this, but we're not going to give you that. That's the thing with the seal on the front of it. It says you served from 1999 to 2003, or whatever it is. And then it says decision, award of this and that. Here it is. But you'll never get the code sheet. The code sheet actually has a diagnostic code, a number, like 7912, I think, is diabetes, 8000 is encephalitis. Everything's got a number. But until you have that diagnostic code, it's kind of hard for you to interpret what would you need to get to a higher rating. And by the same token, just because they say that you've got SMCL for aid and attendance, what else do you have? Well, let's see. You got that 100% rating for PTSD too, huh? And they're only rating you for the aid and attendance because of your COPD. But they look at it as, oh, it's your COPD, your PTSD, your diabetes, your peripheral neuropathy, and your asthma, and your sinusitis, and acute rhinitis. All that is why you need SMCL. Uh-uh. No. You pick the worst one, the one that's got you so screwed up you can't figure out what's up and what's down. That's what you get SMCL for. If you've got COPD and you've got sleep apnea from it and your brain's going fuzzy from lack of sleep, insomnia, that's why you need SMCL for aid and attendance. You don't need it for the PTSD. There's no doubt about it that the PTSD is not your friend, and that's why you're eating, handfuls of Thorazine every day, but that's not the reason for the ANA. So it's 100% rating. What are you supposed to get? You get a bump up from L to M, or if you got a half step of like diabetes for 20 and tinnitus for 10 and throw in a few more and it adds up to 50% or more, you jump from L to L and a half. That's technically, in VA speak, that's SMCP parentheses L plus K or L plus bump up. But they're never going to give you that bump. They're never going to volunteer to give it to you, ever.
So if you say you got your 100% for lung disease, and you've got a 6% rate of heart disease, and, you know, you have a lot of issues with your heart, you know, standing up and stuff like that, and moving around, and your O2 sats drop, you got to have help. So you get 80% based on that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just those two alone. And then you've got other distinct separate ratings, too, that with, when they're added together, it will keep increasing the level of spectrum of compensation, right? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have extra ratings that add up to 50% or more and you're on aid and attendance, as long as those diseases or injuries are separate, distinct, and involve different bodily systems, then they're independently rateable. And once they're independently rateable, you can start applying them with 350 F3 or F4 and get a bump up. Now, I've gone up to the Board of Appeals several different times, John, and I've said, you know, this guy's entitled to SMCL for aid and attendance. But even if, let's just say, just for shits and grins, even if he isn't entitled to SMC, or excuse me, even if he isn't entitled to SMCM due to that 100% bump, even if you insist on saying he, that's part of the aid and attendance thing, he's still got all these other things that add up to 50% or more. So he should get that. Now, I argue that they should be able to award both of them. If you've got a 100% rating that's separate and independent from why you're getting SMCL, then you should get that bump up to M. And my contention is if you got another handful of shit that adds up to 50% or more, you ought to get the bump up from M to M and a half. But every time I get up to the board, they give me the R1, and I never get to have that argument of whether I could have M and one half, where I could get both of those bumps, the one step bump and the half step bump. I keep winning. I don't ever get to argue that.
So you get, okay, I understand that, but the more, so basically what you're saying is if you get eight attendants and the more other ratings you have, is going to be, your final rating is going to be higher, because I know some folks would, you add up to 50, but there's several hundreds in there too.
Well, that's yeah. And another thing is that I've heard people say, well, you know, I'm not going to file any more stuff because I'm afraid they'll start taking shit away from me. Well, look, you're going to get sicker and sicker and sicker. If you qualify for SMCL, chances are you're going to get worse. I mean, that's not good news when you get on SMCL. I mean,
right.
That's the shit wagon. So think about this.
How about that was that?
You want to file for some more things, especially if they're separate and independent, because you can build up that L to an M or M and a half or whatever it happens to be. Don't ever just say, well, I got to SMCL, I'm done. If you got diabetes and all of a sudden Winky quits working, you go in there, what, you get an SMCK. So you can have more than one SMCK, and more appropriately, you can carry that SMCK. You could have that with LMN. When you get to O, you get paid for O. There ain't no K after O or after N. That's the last time you can use your SMCK for money. Once you go to SMCO, you got to put that one in the trash can, or R1 or anything like that.
Right. And Alex is talking about diabetes and a body part that doesn't function. Now, if you have that situation with a body part that don't function and you think you can get an SMK for it, make sure that you haven't had that little surgery back in the day to fix yourself, because that surgery, what do you call it, erases all SMCKs on the week.
Really? I didn't know that. I
mm-hmm. Creative organ. You take the creative out of the organ.
My first vasectomy didn't work, and then all of a sudden my son showed up, and I went back to my doctor, and I said, "You owe me a college education, son." He says, "Screw you! I'll give you another vasectomy for free."
Now, if any agents listening out there, I need to check into that and make sure that's true, because a lot of folks out there might be needing to file.
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point there. If you'd had a vasectomy, you've already kind of destructed your own organ for creative purposes. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, and I know that as far as diabetes mellitus goes, it's the actual act of making it stand up and beg. Well, that's a conversation for another day and not on your radio show, perhaps.
Well, Alex, add that to lung disease and heart disease and diabetes, and you're done.
Well, this one gentleman that you read this redacted Q preliminary, this is interesting. The board decision came down, and these chuckleheads down in Houston cranked out a decision, a rating decision, that granted him his SMCL, but didn't grant him the other stuff I was just mentioning about a bump up to M or a bump to L and a half. So quick like a bunny rabbit, I popped out a 10182 and filled it in there. When it says date of decision, I wrote down 225. Now I'm looking in VBMS and I'm seeing this rating decision, and I'm thinking they're done. They've wrote the decision, they've wrote the code sheet, and they've granted him L, but they did not give him anything else. And I just assumed that was done. So I kited off that 10182 after I called up the rater, and I said, you know, I think he deserves L and a half, or at least M. Well, they did a reconsideration, which, of course, it does not exist, but I can talk a rater into doing a reconsideration for me. Anybody can, if they can at least get the guy's ear, and I got their telephone number, for crying out loud. I just call them up and say, hey, dude, you got shepherd brain. Let me explain why. They don't take that. I can't say that exactly like that. I have to put pour honey over it and tell them how wonderful they are, but they still made a little small error. So they just did the reconsideration and regenerated the same exact document, John, but they dated it March 4th. So I'm sitting up here at the board appealing a decision that's dated 25th. Back in the old days of bay calls, you could never touch anything in the file. You couldn't remove it. Once it was created and it got the little black holes punched in up at the top and they stuck it down over the little metal doohickeys, it was in your file and by operation of law could not be removed. But with BBMS, it's an electronic document. It's not concrete. You can make things disappear. So these son of bitches took that document out and put in the new one on March 4th. So I get my thing gets up to the board. And a year later, they're looking at it, and they said, well, we don't see any decision dated 225 in VBMS, and they canceled my claim. So my way to fix this is to file him for advancement on the docket because he's going bankrupt, and he's filed for bankruptcy. And I did it as a queue at the regional level. So if they deny that, I'll just file it direct back up to the board again. But
is that Vet aware of the Haven Act?
The fact that VA can do pretty much whatever they want to do, and
no,
they, you got a whole lot.
Make sure that guy knows about the Haven Act, Alex.
Well, you have to let me know what it is so that I can let him know.
Well, you know how in a bankruptcy they can't use your Social Security income.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Haven Act made VA benefit the same way.
Oh no, he's aware of that. Yeah, that's okay. Those funds are off the table, correct? But his wife has a job, and and they ran into a problem financially when this corona shit hit. All of a sudden, she can't work. She's sitting at home, and she's filing for unemployment. And all of a sudden, they're saying, well, we've already paid your unemployment out. What do you mean?
To somebody else.
Well, somebody else. That's right. You got one of them fraudulent claims, and the money's gone. And they'll say, well, let's see if we can sort this out. We'll get back to you in August of 2021. Yeah. And she says, well, shit, I'm going to lose my house before that happens. And that's what they're doing. They're losing their house. So I filed this as a Q with a hot rod rider on there for a hardship. And I can shove that through because my change management agent here in Seattle, I just tell her, would you file that person for advancement on the docket for me? Oh, sure, Mr. Graham, I will. I know you never cheat, lie, or steal about that. So I don't have to wait. They'll go ahead and file it. And if they file it with a hardship and I lose it, and, of course, you probably figure that you're going to lose it regionally, but they'll crank the decision out in 30 days, and I can take that up with an advancement on the docket to the board and probably get a decision in 90 days up there. So one way or another, I'm going to get this thing rammed through and get it straightened out and get the boy his money. But I'm just praying it's going to happen before he loses his house, and I don't think it is. That's that just makes me feel sick. But, you know, I feel bad about the fact that I screwed up and filed a 10182 with an incorrect date. But I've got a printed out copy of that rating decision. I suppose if I wanted to fight it at the board and ask for a motion for reconsideration, I might get it done in about a year or a half or something. But, I sometimes when the shit hits the fan, you got to find out the quickest way to get from here to there. And it's not always the same for every veteran. There's different ways you can do it.
Yeah, that's sad.
Well, it is. It pisses me off. I have yet to see anybody get what they were deserving in the SMC lane out the first time out of the gate. They'll deny it. They'll say you're not entitled to it. They'll forget to give it to you. They'll do everything in their power to prevent you from getting there. And worse yet, of course, the idiot's delight, John. It's a son of a bitch in VSOs. Don't get that training. They look at you like deer in the headlights. It's 100%. That's all you can get. Jesus Christ. Who told you you get
what's
more money
SMC?
After that?
What is that? What's SMC? What's that? I don't know what that is.
I don't understand it. They can't grasp that. Obviously, no one aid in attendance is. There's a lot of people to file for that, either by filing for attention plans or otherwise. But I had to go do some deep dumpster diving and digging for Buck on Haddit because he said his wife needed to aid in attendance. And God, I had to search all over Hell's Half Acre to find it, but I finally did and told him to go ahead and file for it. But, you know, when you file for something, it's nice to know that you got the precedence and the legal statute and regulation behind you when you file for it. Oh, wait, it doesn't blow back in your face quite so bad. Somebody answer your phone, Gerald.
So digging into that, Alex, the person's wife needed aid attendance. What's the VA pay the spouse with any other attendance? Is it a certain level, or is it just extra money in the veteran's check, or how does that work?
I looked it up, and hold on a second here. Let me see. Where would that be under? Where is it? Well, I don't know where I put that. It seems to me it was like, now don't quote me on it, I think it's $1,800 somewhere in there, but it isn't a whole lot more. It's about $1,400 if I remember. Wait a minute, here's my email. Let me look at my emails and see if I can find that. How old is that one? Oh, no, that ain't it. I might have thrown it away. I'm sorry. But Ask Buck. He knows. I gave him the information. And he told me he's going to go ahead and file for it. But it isn't under pension. It's a compensation entitlement, and you as a 100% rated veteran are entitled to have it for your wife if you served in a time of war. It's a constricted thing. In fact, most people don't understand this. You're not entitled to SMCS unless SMC anything unless you served in a time of war. You served in a time of peace. Now, VA might make a cue on that one, and I'm not sure, but technically, by operational law, you're not entitled to any SMC of any flavor. I don't call it K, S, P, Q, R, L, Q, B, G, T, anything. You're not entitled to any of that shit unless you served in a time of war. Not in combat, but in time of war. It's no... there's no stricture like 90 days or more in a time of war. It's just your enlistment or your commission had to overlap a period of a war. I believe that's the only criterion. And I believe I found that written in 38 USC. I couldn't find it anywhere in 38 CFR. If it's an entitlement. I'm not going to look it up during the radio show because you know me. I'm 70 years old. I can't shit and polish my shoes at the same time. And yes, I still polish my shoes. I don't take them to. I don't take them down to the cobbler to get polished. I ain't got a shoe shine guy in an airport and close enough to me to get it done. So I do it myself.
Well, if you still polish your shoes, that means you're old school.
Yeah, I am, and I like to make them shine.
Okay.
It doesn't give me a free cup of coffee when I go to Starbucks, so that's I kind of figured out how
to do it. I was in the Navy, and they invented this new shoe. It's like Florsheim made it, called Florshams. They're a very nice shoe, but they're kind of a very shiny shoe.
Mm-hmm.
And we all went together and bought a bunch of them because as we worked in the Navy, you know, we were kind of a grungy bunch with welding and working on the sub and stuff like that. You know, we was the pig pen of the Navy, you know, and inspection days we had to wear them floor shines because it was our shoes, they were all cut and scuffed and everything else. And we tried to get new ones, but they said, "You guys are using too many shoes. Sorry, you can't get none," you know.
Oh my God! I never ran into that problem. Southeast Asia, nobody shined their shoes. God,
yeah,
aren't you shine on something when it's underwater all the time?
That's true. Southeast Asia.
Anyway, you know this whole principle of SMC that a lot of people. It's so convoluted. I mean, where on earth can you pyramid and get away with it? SMC. This is a classic example of where you look at all your ratings. Now, all you have to do is meet that one criteria after you get past SMCL to get a bump. All you have to do, well, 50 or a 100% rating that's independently rateable, different bodily systems. So, like, if your brain doesn't work, if you got major depressive disorder, you get aid in attendance for that, then you're going to have to go out here with a bad back or whatever it happens to be, diabetes with peripheral neuropathy in all four quadrants. Now, that's where I end up helping guys get up to R1 is it's kind of a game plan. You got to make sure at some point or another that your SMCL for aid and attendance is comprised of a certain number of disabilities, and only then do you want to file for something else. So they've already committed. They've already thrown their cards down. And they're raking the chips back into their pile on their side of the table, and you play another card, and you say, "Okay, well, wait a minute, I've got diabetes." Oh, we didn't know you had diabetes. So all of a sudden, they they got to give you, you know, 40% because you got a regulated diet and exercise activities, and you got peripheral neuropathy of 40% in both lowers and 30 in both uppers or something like that. All of a sudden,
that's
you've got
pretty severe.
Oh yeah. Well, I had a guy that was 40% on both his lowers, and they even had one of those vein stripping procedures to kind of increase the blood flow going down there. His feet were like ice cold, numb as a, you know, just like pounding on a brick, couldn't feel them. And I filed him for loss of use of the lower extremities. And it's one of the few I've ever won at the regional level in Waco. They're not bad. Waco, they're not that bad there. I mean, in terms of the Raiders, but unfortunately, they got this new national work queue. So you could be from Waco, and that could be your regional office where you file everything, but you might end up with some idiot in Manila denying you for your loss of use of your lower extremities. You don't have any control over it anymore. That's a bummer, because it's nice when you got your own local office and you file everything and you call these people up and talk to them. And they're all, you know, it's one big team. I like to point out that, you know, when some Raider won't give me what I want, I like to sit there. Of course, I can't look them in the eye like I'd like to, but, you know, you say, hey, listen, we're all on the same team here. This isn't about you and me. It's about the veteran. You shame them. I like to say one of the VA's big things that they create all these little jingles with letters, and they go, I care, and it's printed on everything. I care stands for integrity, compassion, advocacy, respect, and empowerment, or something like that. I don't know. It's close enough. But the A stands for advocacy.
Need to put ED on the back of that. I cared.
Well, so
evaluated.
You know, I write that on my emails. I write that on my emails when I send something off to Waco or once in a while. Yeah, this ain't about you and me, man. I'm the A, and I care. I'm an advocate. I advocate for veterans, and I'm not going to shut up and go away. So, you know, you better understand that if this man's entitled to this, I'm not going to stop working on it until you give it to him. And if you won't, I'll find somebody who will, and his name might have a VLJ in front of his name and might have a JD after his name, but I'm gonna win it. A lot of people just file claims for anything and everything, and they don't have a prayer in hell of winning them. The guy comes to me and he says, well, my VSO, you know, he filed me for this and this and this and this, and he shows 32 things this guy filed for, and I says, wow, really? You have tinnitus? He says, well, no. I said, well, why'd you file for it? He says, well, he filed me for it. He says, we always file you for tinnitus. Everybody has tinnitus. I said, but if you don't, then that would be fraudulent for you to try to claim it. And he says, well, you know, that's why I hired the VSO. They know what they're doing.
One of the organizations that have drink tanks set up in the neighborhood where you go in and file your claim, and time to get in there, the guy's drunk off his gourd and he writes anything down.
Well, yeah, I don't know how it transpired, but the guy had 32 claims, and I said, how many of you things do you think are legitimate? He said, about three. I said, oh, dear God. I said, well,
yeah, I've seen those.
When a guy comes to me, I said, first thing I'm going to do, buddy, is I'm going to send a thing in here. I'm going to withdraw these claims because I don't want you to be in a predicament of being called fraudulent. And more appropriately, veterans don't know how much they benefit from the presumption of credibility. Everything that comes out of your mouth is God's own truth until they prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that you're a liar and a cheat and a child molester. So you don't ever want to lose your credibility. You always want to tell the truth. You don't want to say, well, you know, the reason I get them headaches is because, you know, that thing they put in the back of my neck the third time that they abducted me, you know, the aliens, you know, I told you about that, didn't I?
Hey, wait a minute. There's new evidence that some things exist, so this might be a valid claim.
Hey, you might get some traction after watching that stuff on TV. But bottom line is the,
we're not alone.
If you start talking through the top of your hat, you're gonna lose that presumption of credibility. You can't understand how important that is when you fill out a 4138 right down there at the bottom. It says, "I certify that the above is true and correct to the best of my knowledge and belief," and that's about the same thing as holding up your right hand and saying, "I swear that I'm telling the whole truth and nothing but the truth."
Alex mentioned that guy filed 32 claims. If you guys want to see some humor to a certain extent, go to the BVA website and go ahead and do the decision search. And when you get to the search block, go ahead on any words, buildings, a couple of commas, and then check all years and pull up and just read through some of those decisions. You'll see some with 30, 40, even I guess maybe even 50 items.
Well, it goes by like four or five pages worth of just on the contentions before you even get into the legal description.
Yep. And about 99% of them got denied on it.
No. You're funning me.
No.
Well, when I wrote my book, I tried to explain to people that it doesn't make any sense for you to file for diabetes at the same time you're filing for, let's just say, an Agent Orange disease, pick one, ischemic heart disease or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You file for Agent Orange exposure and you they just deny the primary thing and every, but sometimes they'll even deny some of the predicate downstream things like loss of use of Winky and peripheral neuropathy, this and that.
Uh-huh.
They'll deny that, and then they'll come back and deny the actual diabetes mellitus. They'll deny all the what I consider to be secondaries associated with it, hypertension, things like that. And then they'll come back and whack you on actual diabetes, which is the root cause of it, and the Agent Orange. I used to point this out to people with hepatitis like myself. As I file for the hepatitis, that's what's going to kill you. And you get your rating for the hepatitis, and then you come back and you say, yeah, well, now I'm filing for rheumatoid arthritis or fibromyalgia secondary to it. And I'm filing for hypothyroidism secondary to service-connected hepatitis. Pound the nail in the wall before you start trying to hang your hat on it.
Right. Well, secondary should give you a better effective date anyway.
Well, you know, a lot of people try to create that 18-wheeler with like six trailers hauling along behind it and 40 claims. And, you know, that's just a red flag. A raider looks at that and they just, that thing's already been denied before they even get the pencil out.
They don't have so much time to work on them.
Right, exactly. But, you know, a lot of times they'll go in there and just whack the predicate that you're doing it, and then all the secondaries fall into the trash can along with it. So
right.
if you're going to do it, go for the – I always teach people, if you're going to file for the thing that's going to kill you. Don't be filing for the tinnitus and all that stuff. You want to be filing for that IHD, the coronary artery disease.
Lung disease.
Yes. PTSD will kill you.
Injury.
Happens when you suck on the end of a lead lollipop. It doesn't work real good. So you've got to protect yourself. And you don't let a VSO – and listen, there's good VSOs out there. They call me up and ask me for advice all the time. And I took one guy and taught him how to be an agent. He passed a test. That was priceless. Goes back into the Indiana County Veterans Service office and he goes, everybody congratulate me. I just passed the agent's exam. Boy, I can really win some claims now. And the head dude there, his boss, says, you're fired. What do you mean? I'm accredited. He said, that's right. You can't work here if you're accredited. So,
well, I can't.
Well, because if you look at the way it's written, the congressional charter to work for a VSO says you work for the, you help the Veterans Administration adjudicate the veterans' claim. You can't ever be on both sides of the aisle and say, well, I represent the veteran, but I also represent the VA. You can't.
Okay.
You can't put a foot in both canoes.
All right, guys, you heard that. When you're making a decision about your representation, make sure you take that into consideration.
Well, exactly. And he was heartbroken. He thought he was doing it, and he was going to become the hottest Indiana County service officer that was ever inaugurated. And all he ended up doing was losing his job. Of course, he's making about twice as much money as he was doing that.
Yeah, but God,
he was making $49,950 a year working for Indiana County Service. And now, well, he's making more than that, but he didn't tell me how much more. But he says he's got another side.
Yeah, but it takes, I mean, there's a lot of lead time involved there. Because once you get your foot in the door and get started, you got to find vets and get going. And I want to tell you something. It's going to take them about a year even to start cashing checks.
Well, yeah, and by that time, you know, you've racked up some bills on keeping the lights on, the telephone, like I got me a what's it? Hell, let me turn around here and look at this thing here. This is called a Konica Minolta BizHub C308. It ain't brand
cheap.
New, and that son of a bitch cost somewhere over $11,000. You buy one of those, and yeah, it's cool. You can scan a whole C file in about 60 seconds in paper format. That's how fast it scans. And of course, it can print faster, and you can say Jack Robinson. But,
that's a nice tax deduction, wasn't it?
Well, it's a tax deduction, but it's also a hell of a toll on your wallet. Cost, you pay more than you get in the form of a tax reduction. You could take it all in 5 years or take it all at once, or you can take it over 5 years or something like that, but you still spend the money. I don't give a goddamn how you do it. And that doesn't put the money back in your pocket just because you can write it off.
It's like real estate depreciation, Alex. Come on.
I can't even remember who was a Dell copier, man. You could sit there, you could eat six potato chips in between each printed copy, and the quality of it was hell's bells, and the ink was always running out on it. And hell, I don't think this thing uses ink. It burns it or does something to it. I don't know.
It's laser.
Yeah, I've never put any color in it. But
you will one day.
There's people don't understand when I try to explain to them that there's hard costs and soft costs. I got to keep up my accreditation, which means I got to crank out X number of hours every year showing that I got continuing legal education. I go to attend both NOVA conferences, one spring and the fall. That means you got to hop on an airplane and fly back to D.C. or Nashville or San Diego or wherever they're holding the thing in San Antonio. And then the next time you turn around, go to Cincinnati in the fall. And that costs whatever it costs.
Are you going to Cincinnati in the fall?
No, I think the next one coming up, and it's actually going to be open, is in Washington, D.C. in September. Might be October, but I think it's September at the Hyatt Regency downtown. It's yes, sir.
We're running out of time. You want to give us your contact information?
Yeah, it's Asnod 1234 Yellow Brick Road, Oz, Kansas 60609. No, I'm just kidding. My name's Gordon Alexander Graham. I go by Buckwheat. Few other names like Late for Dinner, and my business address is gagram51@gmail.com and 253-313-5377, and I'm accredited to practice at the Court of Veterans Appeals. I prefer not to. I think that's a waste of time. If I can't win it down below, I'm doing something wrong. And I can't even begin to tell you how much fun it is helping veterans. It gives me a purpose in life at 70 years old. Never thought I'd get out of Vietnam alive, and I'm just blessed by God to be allowed to do this. And why the VA let me into, like a fox into the hen house, just beats the shit right out of me, but I'm glad they did.
Hey, they put you right in there.
Yeah, it's fun. It's just fun, I guess, is the way I like to think about it. It's rewarding, John.
Good deal. Well, it's Alex, thanks for coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming on. We'll do this again. We always enjoy having you on because you rock, buddy. You're good at what you do, and we appreciate you. Of course, we've known you for years. And Mr. Gerald, thank you for sitting back the co-host chair there and keeping the plane straight.
Yeah, I had a nice nap. I thank you. It was pretty nice.
Isn't that your favorite flavor, napioca?
Yeah, napioca. It takes a lot to keep me awake nowadays.
All right. Folks, thank you for
listening
to the show.
No, that was really a nice show.
It was. Everybody, thanks everybody for listening. Folks have called in. We should got, hope you learned something. We always do with Alex on there. So, but stay tuned next week, and we'll have another guest speaker, and this will be John on behalf of Gerald, thehadit.com, Expose That Podcast. We'll be signing off for now.
You've been listening to another episode of the Expose Vet Veterans Podcast. The Expose Vet Podcast is brought to you by Expose Vet. Tune in next week for another edition of the Expose Vet Podcast, and thanks for listening.